Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same, for such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Purport. Parvati might naturally have inquired how devotees become so exalted. Therefore, this verse explains that they are Narayana Para, simply dependent on Narayana. They do not mind reverses in life, because in the service of Narayana, they have learned to tolerate whatever hardships there may be. They do not care whether they are in heaven or in hell. They simply engage in the service of the Lord. This is their excellence. Anukulena Krishnanu Shilanam. They are liberally engaged in the service of the Lord, and therefore they are excellent. By using the word britya brityanam, where is that from? Obviously it's not in this verse. Oh, where is that from? Anybody remember? Yeah, it's yesterday's verse. Britya brityanam. Britya is a what? Servant. So, in other words, all of the servants. Lord Shiva pointed out that although Tritiketu provided one example of tolerance and excellence, all the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord as eternal servants are glorious. They have no eagerness to be happy by being placed in the heavenly planets, becoming liberated, or becoming one with Brahman, the supreme effulgence. These benefits do not appeal to their minds. They are simply interested in giving direct service to the Lord. Narayana Parasarve Nakutash Chanabibhuti Swargapravarga Narakeshu Apyatulyartadarshinaha. Of course, this is a verse to which Prabhupada refers often. Devotees solely engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. So for us who are in this material life, conditioned life, we often aspire to be unaffected by our circumstances. Right? Sometimes we have very difficult circumstances and we become affected. We become very angry, or we become very fearful. We become very upset. One devotee was just saying to me how someone at work was criticizing her. And she became so upset and afraid, maybe I'll lose my job. So to be equipoised in all situations, unaffected by all situations. Not just unaffected and tolerant, but happy. And not just that the devotees are just Om Shanti Shanti in all situations, but they're finding joy in all situations, even in reverses. What a wonderful thing to aspire for, if we could have joy in all situations. So this verse is giving us a little hint why and how. Now, Prabhupada specifically says here, how do the devotees do this? What is the method? Just like Arjuna asks in the 14th chapter, what are the symptoms of transcendence and how do you do it? What's the process? So we can look at some very interesting points in this verse. There's three places mentioned in the verse. What are those three places? Swarga, Apavarga, and Narakeshu. So Swarga means heaven. Right? Generally, people want heaven. Even many of the people who come here to the temple, they're not really looking for Krishna. They're looking for heaven. They want to see, oh, nice park and garden, right? Beautiful place. Or I just came from San Diego and before that, Hawaii. And so many people are going to those places looking for heaven. When I tell people, oh, I spent time in Hawaii, they say, oh, Hawaii. They think just because there's some emerald water and there's some palm trees with coconuts on them that it's like heaven. Of course, there's also mosquitoes and so many other things. So we're generally looking for heaven. And the other one, apavarga. Pavarga means the hard labor in this world, to be free of that, to be liberated. So these are the two things people are looking for, either heavenly sense pleasure, nice food, beautiful gardens, pleasant people, youthful, healthy, beautiful body. Or else, freedom from suffering. And generally, people who take to religious life take to it for one of these two reasons. Generally, the goals of people who are worshiping God are either they want heaven or they want liberation. And certainly materialistic people want one of those two things. Then Narakeshu, that's what we're trying to avoid. Everyone's trying to avoid some hellish situation. Nobody wants to have bodily pain, mental anxiety, right? Nasty people, bad weather, hard labor. And the devotees are equal to three. And it says specifically, tulya artha. So this word artha is very interesting. What does artha mean? For the sake of? What else does artha mean? Nice to see you, Marsh. What is another meaning of artha? Dharma, artha, karma, moksha. To gain something. Economic development, wealth, value, something that has value. So the devotees don't see any value, or they see equal value. Tulyartha, it's equal value, the same. It reminds us of course, 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says the yogis see what? The same. Why do the yogis see the same? Pebbles and gold. Generally, we don't see pebbles and gold the same. And what else do the yogi? And even further advanced is the yogi who sees what? The same. Yes, friends, enemies, and neutral. So that's very difficult. Seeing pebbles and gold the same, that's hard. But seeing friends, enemies, and the neutral the same, that's extremely difficult. So the devotees are seeing equal value. This is very important, this word artha, equal value. And actually see, darshinaha, it's not something theoretical. Oh yes, I've taken my Bhakti Shastri classes and I know I'm supposed to have equal vision, vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavi hastani suni chaiva swapakita pandita samadarshina. Yes, but in reality, I don't see the same value. So darshinaha, the devotees say they're actually seeing the same value, and when they see the same value, they become bibhuti, which means they have no fear. They have no fear. It gives us a little hint of what is the psychology of someone who can be joyful in all circumstances. They have no circumstance gives them fear. They're not looking for artha in their circumstance, and therefore they have no fear. Why? Because Narayanapura. And Prabhupada translates that here, or in the purport specifically says, they're dependent. They're dependent on the Lord, and he says they're simply interested in giving direct service to the Lord, which I'm not going to talk about that today, but as an interesting point that Prabhupada mentions the word direct service. Sometimes Prabhupada talks about indirect service. So what is this artha or benefit that generally we look to find in our circumstances? We're thinking, I am this body, and pleasure for this body or this mind is happiness for me. We're all pleasure-seeking entities. We cannot live without pleasure. It's impossible. We're pleasure-seeking. Just like in the military, they have these heat-seeking missiles. So we're pleasure-seeking entities. The scientists call it the pleasure principle. Anandamaya Vyasat, that's our basic nature. Prabhupada was once asked in South America, what is the purpose of life? He said, Ananda, the purpose of life is to be happy, to be not just happy, like, yeah, I'm happy. How are you today? Oh, I'm fine. Not that kind of happiness, but expansive joy, so much joy, like David said in the Psalms, my cup runneth over, that one feeling one's heart is just overflowing with, you can hardly contain the joy. And therefore, the devotees are exhibiting the sattvic abhavs, because the joy is just overflowing, that they're shivering and perspiring and trembling. And, all right. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is aspiring for this stage. So naturally, we're pleasure-seeking, and as long as we think that I'm this body, I'm this mind, we're identifying pleasure as a situation that's favorable for the body and mind. If I'm the skin, then if I have nice soft things on my skin, that's happiness. If I'm the little lump of muscle in the mouth, then, you know, if there's something soft and tasty on the tongue, that's happiness. If I'm the eyeballs, then something pretty, they call it eye candy, right? Some pretty mountain. Or on the plane yesterday, I was thinking, Eko Bahunam Yo Vidati Kaman. I always wanted to see the northern lights. I said, it'd be nice to see the northern lights. And the pilot announced, if you look out the left window, you'll see the northern lights. Curtains of blue in the sky. So we're thinking that something beautiful, that's pleasure. A mountain, a waterfall. One of my friends in Hawaii said, let's go for a walk. I said, okay, it's good, get some exercise. And she took me up this mountain to see a waterfall. And the whole way was all these mud-covered rocks. So you're watching, all your meditation is on your feet so you won't fall in the mud. All this tapasya just to go see a waterfall. It's ridiculous. So people are thinking, if I see a waterfall, if I see a mountain, or if I see a beautiful human, the warthog is thinking, if I see a beautiful warthog, then I will be happy. If we think I'm the nose, then if I smell a nice rose, I smell a gardenia, or I hear some attractive music. So therefore, one is thinking that swarga is artha. That is going to give me some profit. And on the other hand, if we don't want to suffer, either we want to enjoy or we don't want to suffer, which are very similar, but they're not exactly the same. Not wanting to suffer is just you want a state of neutrality. So that's, again, I'm thinking my profit will be just simply if I can be peaceful. Sometimes this comes just a person is suffering so much that they give up on having any sense pleasure. They say, oh, let me be peaceful. Let me cease to exist. Let me have suicide practically. Or else a little bit more intelligent person who understands that all this so-called artha is really the source of distress, dukkha yoni. So then they say, okay, apavarga, let me stop this hard labor for sense enjoyment in the world. And then they think that is a profit, just to be neutral. That will be my wealth. And one who thinks that wealth is in sense pleasure or in relief from sense pain is always full of fear. Therefore the word bibhyati, they're free of fear. Why fear? Because those sources of happiness are all shaky. Not very shaky. Being able to see nice things depends on having nice things around me. Can you always have pretty things around you? Is that possible? No. Can you always have good eyesight to see them? No. Can one control one's eyesight, one's acuity of eyesight, or can one control the beauty of one's surroundings? Is that under our control? Can anybody control that? Can you always make sure that everything around you is attractive to see? No. And the same with all of the other senses, to touch, to taste, to smell, to hear. Can we control our ability to do that? And can we control whether or not we have sense objects that will give pleasure to our senses? Does anyone here have pleasurable sense perception? 24 hours a day? Anybody? Has anyone gone for one whole day where all of their sense perception was enjoyable? No. So always fear. And as Krishna also says, they have a beginning and an end. So always afraid. How am I going to get something? Where? How? Am I going to get a soft bed? Am I going to get some sweet rice? Am I going to get some pretty trees to look at? What to speak of for the mind? Am I going to get people who treat me with consideration and respect and appreciation and understanding? Am I going to have a nice community? Am I going to have some meaningful work to do? Am I going to have something stimulating to my intelligence? These are not under our control. Even the ability of the body and mind to enjoy the world is not under our control. Comes, goes. So always fearful. Am I going to get it? 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 Am I going to lose it? Am I going to lose it? Am I going to lose it? Even when you're enjoying it, you're in fear. Every moment one is enjoying, one is thinking, when am I going to lose it? When am I going to lose it? When am I? Because it's not if, it's when. If is guaranteed, one is going to lose it. And if that wasn't bad enough, because these pleasures don't touch the soul, they're never satisfying. They simply inflame the desires. You don't say, now I'm completely satisfied. Maybe you can say that for 1 minute. Oh, I just got married. I just got a new house. I just got a new car. I just got the perfect job. I'm satisfied. But it doesn't stay. So therefore, one must be always fearful. And one is always fearful of trying to avoid naraka, trying to avoid naraka, hell. How can I avoid suffering? Every moment that we're just like when I was walking up that mud-covered mountain, one is always thinking, oh, I might fall, break my leg, fall off the mountain, or at least get all covered with mud. So that also, that fear is always there. That the source of my pleasure, my body, is so fragile. Such a fragile body. You just knock it a little bit and you have to be in a cast. Right? Just poke it a little bit and you can't see anything anymore. You can't hear anything anymore. So the hell is following us all the time. Oh, you might become a quadriplegic. You might become an Alzheimer's victim. But this might happen, that might happen. Always fearful. So how to be free from fear? Don't have that be your artha. Don't see that as wealth. Very simple. Don't look for pleasure in the world. Don't have that be your happiness. Then where's the fear? If my happiness isn't dependent on the stimulation of my senses and my mind, then if I have it or I don't have it, it doesn't matter. Therefore, of the six opulences, the greatest opulence is what? Renunciation. Such an opulence. People think renunciation is austerity. Oh, it's not. Renunciation gives millions and millions and millions of times more enjoyment than beauty and wealth and fame and strength. Because when one's renounced, then you can't be affected by anything. Doesn't matter. If sweet rice isn't the source of my pleasure, then if I get sweet rice or I don't get sweet rice, I'm not fearful. I'm not affected. And even worshiping Krishna, actually, Krishna's opulence of renunciation is very attractive. Very attractive. Sometimes the devotees become disturbed by Krishna's opulence of renunciation. I'm just at that part now in Krishna book where Krishna leaves all the gopis in the Ras dance. Krishna increases and increases and increases their desire for service. And as soon as their desire to serve the Lord is at a fever pitch, he leaves. And he comes back. I was just reading this morning. He comes back and they say, we have a question for you. There seem to be different kinds of people who reciprocate in love. Some people reciprocate equally. Some give more, no matter how contrary the beloved is, and some are neglectful. Who do you think is the best? Actually, they were very angry at him, but they didn't want to express their anger because they love him so much. And he says, well, merchants are worse than people who don't love at all. He says, the worst is the ungrateful person who takes and doesn't give. A little better than that is the merchant who at least gives what he takes, but a merchant even is condemned. And best is the person who gives even if the other is contrary, but there are some who are self-satisfied. They're not ungrateful, they're not merchants, nor are they just givers, they're self-satisfied. Don't worry, he says. I love you and I appreciate your service, but sometimes I reciprocate with you in this way. So sometimes the devotees get annoyed at Krishna's opulence of renunciation, or Krishna just goes to Mathura. He tells the gopis, I can never repay your service, and he leaves. Oh, I'm coming right back, he says. And then they finally see him at Kurukshetra. after 3 months, he goes back to Dwork. But yet, without this opulence of renunciation, all the other opulences are not really valuable. If somebody's attached, if somebody's very intelligent, but they're very attached to being very intelligent, it's not so attractive, is it? If someone's very attached to their beauty, very proud of their beauty, then they're not so beautiful anymore. Or someone who's attached to their wealth. That pride and attachment and arrogance renders the other opulences unattractive. So even for us, the most attractive opulence is renunciation. But is it just renunciation? Is it just that the devotees have this opulence of detachment? Yes, with detachment, one becomes fearless. And fearlessness brings peace. And Krishna says that to be happy, you must be peaceful. You can only be peaceful if you're completely detached. Peacefulness is not possible for the attached. Attached means hankering and lamenting. Must. You cannot be attached to sense pleasure and be happy. So for the materialist, this seems madness. They say, the only way I can be happy is not to care about happiness, and how will I be happy? So people are afraid of renunciation. They think, I won't have any pleasure, not realizing that detachment from sense pleasure brings greater happiness. But just detachment, that's just the stage of peacefulness. That's not enough. That's not going to satisfy the soul. You can't remain on that platform. Avasuddha Buddhiya, your intelligence is not yet pure just if you're detached. And again, you'll come back to the realm of sense enjoyment. Even though detachment is a higher pleasure. Because there's a certain thing we're looking for. We're not just looking for peace. We're also looking for excitement. We're also looking for adventure. We're also looking for relationships and mystery, not just peace. Therefore, the devotees can maintain their level of renunciation and detachment because they're finding everything in Krishna, Narayanapura. They're depending on Krishna. And they're depending on Krishna in two ways. First of all, they're depending on Krishna, well, more than two, we'll think about two. They're depending on Krishna for their circumstances. If Krishna wants me to be in heaven, fine. If Krishna wants me to be in hell, that's fine too. Wherever he wants me, that's okay. Mare Krishna Rake Ke Rake Krishna Mare Ke. If Krishna wants to give me something, Prabhupada says he has 10 hands and I can't even accept everything he wants to give me. Like Sudama Brahmana, the acharyas say he was very attached to his renunciation. Therefore, Krishna gave him all this opulence. And if Krishna wants to take everything away, you can't hold on to it. He can take with his 10 hands what you can't hold on to with your 2 hands. And the devotee who depends on the Lord gives up fear. Gives up fear. Like people will say, oh, what will happen to me when I'm old? My contemporaries are starting to talk like this now. I never married, I never had a family. Or I had married and my husband left me, my wife left me, my children are all nonsense. Who's going to take care of me when I'm old? What's going to happen with this? What's going to happen if I lose my job? What's going to happen if this happens? What's going to have all these fears and anxieties? And very, very simple. Mare Krishna Rake Ke Rake Krishna Mare Ke. Krishna wants you to be taken care of when you're old. You'll be taken care of when you're old. Krishna wants you to be in the street as a homeless bum living out of trash bins. And that's what you'll do. Obviously, we're one of the 5 factors of action, but ultimately it's Krishna. I can endeavor for this and for that. I can endeavor for money and clothes and food and friends and so many things. And if Krishna wants to take them away, he can take them away. And if I don't make any endeavor for these things, if Krishna wants to give, he can give. Therefore, the devotee is dependent on Krishna. Krishna, whatever you want to give me. I'm your employee. I'm working in your company. I'm doing the company business. Whatever you want to give me. I might ask sometimes, my dear Lord, it might be nice to have a bigger desk to do the job you've given me. He wants to give, he can give. He doesn't want to give, he doesn't give. He may sometimes say, oh, you've worked so hard, you take a vacation. Prabhupada says that the master may say to the servant, here, there's something for you to enjoy. And then as Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati comments in, I think it's text 61 in Brahma Samhita, the devotee accepts everything as the Lord's prasad. Oh, you want to give me something? Thank you very much. You don't want to give? Thank you very much. Even that is the prasad. Therefore, they have no anxiety. Because suvritam sarvabhutanam, whatever Krishna gives is good. He's my best friend. If Krishna throws me out on the street living out of trash bins, that must be what's good for me. If Krishna makes me a quadriplegic, that must be what's good for me. If Krishna has all my friends think I'm a demon and nobody wants to talk to me anymore, that must be what's good for me. And because that's not where my artha is coming from, that's not my wealth, it doesn't matter. My wealth is not in satisfaction for the body and mind. So Krishna gives that? Okay, Krishna doesn't give it. Okay, it doesn't matter. Where is my wealth? Where is the devotee's wealth? Devotee's wealth is in service. In relationship with Krishna. That's the devotee's wealth. That's the devotee's source of happiness. Is Krishna happy? We have some little reflection of that even with other jivas. Now your child goes on the stage and gets their diploma and you're not getting the diploma, but you feel happy. Even, you know, a person's sports team wins the tournament and they're celebrating. They didn't win the tournament. So Krishna's happy, I feel happy. As Prahlad Maharaj said, just like when you decorate your face, the reflection is also decorated. That's the devotee's happiness, and that can never be taken away. Not only can it never be taken away, that is something that we can control. In fact, that's the only thing we can ultimately control. Do I love Krishna or not? Do I think of Krishna or not? Do I serve Krishna or not? That I can control. I can love Krishna and serve Krishna and think of Krishna in all circumstances. That's something I can do. I can't make sure there's always nice sounds and nice food and nice friends. Nice weather. I can't make sure this body always functions. But I can make sure I always love Krishna. Nobody can take that away. That's something that belongs to me. My will. That's the only thing really that belongs to me. And when I give that to Krishna voluntarily, I can do that in any circumstance. Then that's my wealth. Prema, we're talking about wealth and prema dana bina vyartha daridra jivana dasa kori betan more deha prema dana. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays like this. He says, I want this wealth of love. Dasa kori. I just want to be your servant. Betan more. Betan, excuse my bad Bengali pronunciation. Betan means salary. Sometimes we discuss, should devotees get a salary? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is asking for a salary. He says, Betan Mori. Deha Prema then. Give me this love then. Vibhyanti. Fearless. Fearless. I can take this dana, this wealth, wherever I go, in this body, out of this body. In the heaven of Bhaktivedanta Manor. In the hell of the airport. Doesn't matter. Wherever I am, whatever circumstances, everybody likes me, everybody hates me. I'm poor, I'm rich, I'm sick, I'm healthy. Doesn't matter. Even Kita Janma, even I'll be an insect. It's all right. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I'll be an insect even. As long as I can have this love. So one's happiness is not the place, one's happiness is not the activity, one's happiness is that relationship with Krishna. Oh, Krishna's happy. Somehow I've made Krishna happy. And that one can have every moment, moment to moment to moment to moment to moment. So this is something we can ask ourselves. Where am I getting my happiness? We're going to be looking for our happiness somewhere. It is not possible to turn off the desire for happiness. Sometimes devotees think that we're supposed to just turn some switch and not want to be happy anymore. Let's just be miserable in Krishna consciousness. First of all, it's not our philosophy, and second of all, it's impossible. We're pleasure-seeking entities like heat-seeking missiles. That's our nature. So we can ask ourselves, what's the source of my happiness? Where am I trying to get happiness from? Am I trying to get happiness from some sense object? Am I trying to get happiness from some mental thing? Am I planning, or if I get certain result, then I'll be happy? If I can build such a building, I'll be happy. If I can publish such a book, then I'll be happy. If I can go to this place, then I'll be happy. If I get a particular fruit, then I'll be happy. Or are we thinking, it's my relationship with Krishna that's making me happy? It's my pleasing Guru and Krishna that's the source of my happiness. So questions, comments, corrections?